how happy is everybody? All the traveling media, truly, how happy are they that Nashville won?
You know what? I think we're happy. I think our livers are not happy.
Yeah.
Like, they think that's the one thing. You know what? It's great. You know, it's great for them. I think it's always good to get fresh blood once in a while. And, you know, I think there's been a lot written and said about Nashville as a market and where it was and where it is. You know, they've done things the hard way, but there's been a lot of people who've done a lot of work there. I was talking to Matthias Ekholm yesterday, and, you know, I was like, well, what's it like? And he goes, you don't understand what it's like to play in front of that building. And there have been a lot of people who put a lot of work into it, and a lot of people who saved it, and it's good to see them get rewarded for, you know, doing a lot of things that made it a pretty good hockey market, no question.
Yeah, like, there's the slang term Smashville, but I know that David Poile was even talking about it. We had to make it a thing. We couldn't just throw hockey players on the ice and play the game. We had to make it an event, and we had to make it special. And having been there, from the horn to the PA announcer, the chanting and all the stuff they do, it is unlike any other building you'll go to.
Well, and David had some really good advice. Like, when I was talking about Vegas with him once, and he talked about how the thing that he would advise Vegas to do, and I think it's great advice, is you have to use your arena and your game presentations as an extension of your market. You have to make it what your market is to make it successful. And he talked about the whole Smashville thing and the bands and the country music, and that's exactly what they did. It's a game, and for those of you who've been there, you know, it's an experience unlike any other in the NHL. And you take a look at what Vegas has done. Who have they hired to do their between-period intermissions? Cirque du Soleil. And that says to me that's a great call. That's right out of the Nashville playbook. Like, this is Nashville, so we're going to make a hockey game in our city an extension of what we are. If that's what Vegas is going to do, they're going to make a hockey game in Vegas an extension of what they are. And I think that's the way you have to do it. I mean, what other city could have a controversy over the anthem singers like Nashville is? It's hilarious. Like, yeah. The guy's upset because all the big stars are coming in to do your games. That's how you know that what you've got is an event.
Yeah. And it will be crazy. That's like you say, it's nice to have some fresh blood. I'm happy for that fan base. I'm happy for that city, because they've been closer to having their team leave on numerous occasions than to getting to a cup final.
Well, and you know, I used to go to games down there, and there, you know, like every stadium, there's an upper bowl and there's a lower bowl. And the upper bowl was always full. You know, the hardcore fans, there were a section of them, and they loved it. And it was always full. And the lower bowl, where the more business executives would be, it was empty. And I think the hardcore fans there really resented that for a while. And then when they were really in danger of losing their team, and there was a good article about it the other day in the Tennessean, when they were really in danger of losing their team, the business community stepped up, including some people who really didn't know or like hockey. And, you know, I think you can, like, they're a two-sport town. Their NFL and their hockey. And I mean, you know, Tennessee, the university where they play football, is not far away. And Vanderbilt has its moments as a sport, but isn't really a power in a lot of the major sports. You decide if you want it to be your identity. And they decided they wanted it to be their identity. And they've done an unbelievable job with it. The All-Star game last year was a huge success. And, you know, they've just done a lot of things right, and it's good to see them be rewarded for it, no question about it.
It's really too bad that they now have to go into this final round without their number one center.
Well, you know, I think that's kind of the way the NHL is now, right? Like, I mean, look at Anaheim. Like, so they finish their season, and we find out that Lindholm's going to be out for 5 months, maybe, and Vatanen for even longer. You know, there's always a debate about, you know, which is the hardest trophy to win. And I'm not one of those please like my sport guys. I don't need the validation of, you know, people saying the Stanley Cup is the hardest to win. But the toll it takes on these players, it is you know, the one thing I think that's really cruel about the NFL is that there aren't guaranteed contracts. One of the things I like most about hockey is that for the most part, these contracts are guaranteed. And the athletes really put their bodies on the line. Like, you look at those Anaheim guys, the surgeries that they're going to have. You look at Pittsburgh. Yes, Nashville is going to be missing Johansson and Fiala, but Pittsburgh is going to be missing Chris Letang. You look at what Carlson did when he was clearly banged up in the playoffs. I mean, Cody Ceci was going back to the dressing room 5 times a game. You know, I just look at what these players do to win, and I think it's the most impressive thing about hockey. They really put their bodies out there to win, and the toll that it takes on them and is enormous, and I respect that about the players.
Sticking with the Anaheim blue line, it sounds like Kevin Bieksa is pretty dinged up as well. He was a popular buyout candidate. Does this make it completely impossible? And what sort of plan does Bob Murray have for expansion? Because if there's any team that's going to lose a stud, I'd put Anaheim the top of the list.
Well, I think I wouldn't be surprised if they're going to have a conversation about, are you willing to waive your no trade for the expansion draft? Like, I wouldn't be surprised if that conversation, I wouldn't be surprised if it hasn't already happened, and then we'll see where it goes. But I do think there'll be a conversation there about what are you willing to do and can something be worked out? So I would guess that is probably, Ryan, the first conversation, because you're right. I don't think he's going to be able to be bought out. And I, you know what? Like, I really like Kevin as a person, and I'm, you know, happy he isn't going to be a buyout candidate. I understand why it has to happen sometimes for business reasons, but I got a lot of time for him as a guy, and I'd like to see him avoid that. Put it that way.
Watching Justin Schultz last night, and we were talking about it careful, Elliot. Jeez.
No, I'm standing. Someone else is honking. Yeah.
The looking at the season Justin Schultz had, he's going to need a contract, and he was kind of lost at sea for so long. Comes through with a 51-point season. He's got 10 points in 15 games, plus being injured in the postseason. He's going to get royally paid, and this is kind of what we expected, all the hype when he came in. He's now 26, you know, 6'2", 200, and clearly, I don't know if he's elite defensively, but he's going to make some money, which is another thing that the Penguins need to look at.
Well, you know, John Shannon reported last night that he's playing with broken ribs, and I don't know that for sure, but I would believe John 100%. That's quite something. Scored last night. Didn't play a lot. They managed his minutes, at least when I checked earlier. It might have attacked some on later, but they were managing his minutes. But it goes back to what we were talking about, is the incredible toll that these guys are willing to take on their bodies. And Schultz was another example of that. He really took one for the team and played in a situation where I think a lot of times it would have been easy to say no. He misses unrestricted free agency, I think, by 5 days. I think his birthday's on July the 6th or July the 5th or something like that. So he's got another year before he really gets there. But you're right. You know, it's basically you got to make your decision now. And, the one thing I think about Schultz is that he has learned about the right situation. And, you know, I think that's something that's going to mean a lot to him, is that he understands now that, as well as anyone else, that you have to make sure if you're going somewhere that it's the right fit for you. And, you know, Edmonton, there were a lot of changes. And, you know, I think that affected him as much as anybody else. He goes to Pittsburgh, there's stability. And this year, his quality of competition increased with the losses on their D. I still think that most teams will say that he's not a number one or number two, but he's a really good 3-4. And I think he'd be comfortable with that. And I think if you're going to a situation, if he's going to, and I think he will look as much, guys, about situation as he does about contract.
Man, I mean, I just don't know where they'd be without him. Letang's injury, it felt devastating, but then it's just he seems to be Letang insurance, and I don't know that anyone else could provide what he's provided. It's an unbelievable find.
The thing, he was a great find. It was a great risk reward signing, and it worked out for them. But you know, they've got some cap issues. You know, they They're probably going to lose Bonino, although he hasn't had a great playoff. You know, they got to decide what they're going to do with Daly. And, you know, how are you going to make that decision, Daly or Schultz? Ideally, you'd like to keep both. Letang comes back. You know, they're going to lose Fleury because he makes $2 million more than Murray, so you're going to let him go. You know, you've got a lot of decisions that you've got to make there. And, you know, I think we're seeing now, you know, with the backdiving contracts guys being taken out of the CBA, more and more teams are going to be, okay, you know, we're going to have some big ones, and then we got to fill out the roster. And Pittsburgh, I mean, it's amazing. They have a chance to become the first team in the cap era to go back-to-back. And I don't think, Ryan, there's enough understanding of what an incredible accomplishment that would be.
Now, I think it was you that reported it. If not, we'll just go with it. Kyle Dubas being interviewed by the Colorado Avalanche. Less from the Leaf perspective, I'm just curious from Colorado. What is it they would like about Kyle Dubas? Because he was there for a while, and then they brought a bunch of players in that front office in Toronto. What's he been responsible for, and would he be a good fit there?
You know, Dean, this is a weird story. Like, there's been a lot of twists and turns here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to answer your question directly. I'm just going to tell you what I know. First of all, I think it's over, that whatever window was there since I've reported it. And one of the things I said on Tuesday when I mentioned it is I'm not exactly sure where it stands. Sometimes when you actually go to air with something or write something, it brings even more clarity. And that's the case here. I believe the window is closed. I don't think he'll be going. And I believe that Toronto closed the window, that initially they were willing to let him go, and then they weren't. And so I think that's kind of where it stands here. It's an interesting situation. There was some pushback from Colorado at the beginning in saying that it wasn't accurate and it didn't happen. And I think that it's possible that there were people in Colorado who didn't know that it had happened.
I see.
But there was definitely contact. There was permission given. And for whatever reason, and only Toronto knows, and, you know, you've got a better chance of getting the nuclear codes than probably this information out of Toronto. But I think Toronto revoked permission, and I don't think he's going.
Had some conversations this week, did you? Some phone calls?
Yeah, some discussions? There were a few of them.
It's weird how that goes, right?
It was, you know, I got to tell you, it was a strange story, because normally when you get some information, you know, the one thing I really like about covering this league is that generally people won't, if you have something, most people won't flat out lie to you. They'll say, well, either you're okay, you know, you're halfway there and I better make sure you get this right. Or they'll say, you know what, I'm just not going to talk about it. This one, it wasn't as if anyone was lying. It was more like, yeah, we're not going to touch this one.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, what's going on here? And it's a really weird story. Like, and I think nobody really knew 100% where it stood. And the best guess I can give you is we speak at 8 Mountain Time today.
Yeah.
Is that I believe Toronto's closed the window and he's not going.
What is the succession plan look like in Toronto? Because Dean, at the Colorado angle, I'm fascinated about Toronto because of how many bodies are new there and how many guys are highly touted. And I'd heard from a scout that some of those meetings between the development versus the numbers guys have been entertaining to watch, to say the least.
Well, I think that's fair. I think you've got some really strong-willed guys there. There's no question about that. Lou Lamoriello is a very strong-willed guy. Mike Babcock is a very strong-willed guy. Mark Hunter is a very strong-willed guy. Like, they've all got their opinions, no question about it. What the succession plan is, I don't think anybody knows for sure. I do think this, you know, Lou Lamoriello's got one more year left on his contract. What does he want to do? Does he want to leave or does he want to stay? You know, I have no doubt that he's invigorated by this. And I could see him wanting to stay. I know he's 74 years old, but he's a young 74. And you know, he loves it. And so I think a lot of us have kind of thought that Mark Hunter is the GM in waiting, that whenever, you know, Lamoriello moves on, Mark Hunter would be the next guy. But I do know one thing that Brendan Shanahan really likes and respects Kyle Dubas. He's a big believer in him. And, you know, the fact that they didn't let him go here, I wonder what it means. Again, you have to interpret smoke signals coming out from Toronto because they don't give you a lot of hints. But, you know, I've always assumed in the last couple of years, I've assumed that Mark Hunter would be next. The fact that Toronto doesn't appear willing to let, you know, Dubas go, we'll find out if that means anything is different.
As you might imagine, we're still talking about goaltenders in this city and with these fans. I won't ask you so much again about, because we've had this conversation many times. And the question I will ask, the New Jersey Devils win the number one pick. They were not a very good hockey team. Only Colorado had fewer victories. What do you see happening there? Obviously, Shiro is still putting his fingerprints on this team. They have, I mean, Camilleri was a healthy scratch. That doesn't happen. With Kovalchuk coming back, obviously people are wondering, is someone like Schneider available because they're going to be bad for a while? What do you see happening with the Devils?
Well, it's interesting. You know, first of all, Kovalchuk is probably not going to play there. He's probably going to play somewhere else. That's right. Number one. Number two, Andrew Gross, who's a reporter in, I think he works for the Record there. I hope I don't get his paper wrong. But he had an interview with Ray Shiro yesterday where Shiro said he met with Corey Schneider and said he's not trading him.
Gotcha.
So that would put an end to that as you try to get me in trouble with rumors everywhere around the internet. You know, here's one for you. I wonder. Colorado is, it's not 100% done, but they're a long way down the road with a goalie coach by the name of UC Parkia. He's a Finn, and he used to work in the KHL, and he's got a long history with Varlamov and Bobrovsky, but Varlamov is the key here. So that says to me that, as they have said, they are protecting Varlamov, and they are taking a shot at him with their goalie. You're not bringing this guy overseas unless you're saying, all right, Semyon, here's your guy, and we're going to take a run with it. So to me, that makes Calvin Pickard expendable.
Right.
And because he can't protect both. And Calvin Pickard just had a really nice World Championships. If I was Calgary, maybe he's a guy I look at.
And it's a, I like how you're picking your words carefully, and I understand why. You take the World Championships, and then you look at his season. I mean, they were so poor and so bad. How do you evaluate what kind of a year or what you've got when a guy plays in less than NHL level at the Worlds, and then for the worst the worst team in hockey?
Yeah, well, you know what? It may be less than NHL level at the Worlds, but there were still a lot of good players there. Like, he took Henrik Lundqvist to a shootout in the championship game.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't beat, like, you look at the teams they beat. You know, they beat Russia, and that Russian team was pretty good. And they had a lot of guys playing for Russia who are international hockey players. And that Swedish team was pretty good, including having the MVP of the tournament in William Nylander.
Yeah.
So, I don't discount that. You're playing against world-class players over there. Maybe not the best, but world-class. And, you know, Colorado, yes, that was a nightmare year last year, and I think that takes into consideration. I mean, the one thing I look at is, hey, what is it going to cost you? What does Colorado want? They're going to want something, but they're kind of up against it a bit. So, you know, we'll see how much it is. But if you look at Pickard, I think he's got another year under contract at a very good number. To me, it's a worthwhile gamble. And the other thing you do is, if you're Calgary, you know, you're probably watching footage of him and saying, okay, you know, if he's playing behind Mark Giordano and TJ Brody and Dougie Hamilton and whoever else is on our blue line, you know, does that chance happen? Does this chance happen? What happens on this play? What happens on that play? I think if you're Calgary, you take a look at the kind of team you're going to have in front of them. I bet you you're looking at a lot of those goals and saying, all right, now, is that one going to happen here? And, you know, Braden Holtby has a good system I really like. And he divides his goals into three kinds: could have had, should have had, and no chance. And I would be very curious to hear an independent team say about a guy like Pickard, mm-hmm. All right, how many of these were could have had, how many of these were should have had, and how many of these were no chance? And I bet you Calgary would feel, in front of its team, those numbers would be different.
Well, even in front of that team, he had a save percentage over 900 and a 2.98, which, again, on the surface is not great. But for that team, because we watched that team a lot, they were close, and this team played them. They were just deplorable on defense. So,
well, all I can tell you is this, is that I know guys who went overseas and saw him and said, look, I had one opinion of him before I got there, and I've got a better opinion of him now. So he's at least an intriguing candidate.
Forgive me if you've been asked this many times, but if Marc-Andre Fleury controls this whole thing, why is everyone saying Vegas? Why would that be choice number one for a guy who's got 2 years left on his deal and there won't be a lot of winning in Vegas years one and two, I'm guessing?
Well, you know, first of all, I give Nick credit because Nick has been on this one for a while, and I think he's got a great chance for history to prove him right. You know what? Like, first of all, who knows what Vegas is going to be like? I mean, you're right. There probably won't be a lot of winning, but there might be some. And you know what? Fleury can make a big difference right away. Like, you know, I'm intrigued about he went after Shipachov and got him. It looked like a lot of teams think he's getting Dadonov, who Shipachov's running mate to. You know, and we'll see. Like, as you mentioned, teams like Anaheim, teams like Columbus, teams like Minnesota, they're going to have some expansion issues. And what can, you know, Vegas do out of that? And you know what? I think, you know, if you look at it, I think for a long time, I think Fleury wanted to go to Dallas. That option is no longer there. Okay? So unless they're going to work out a deal in Calgary somehow, and Pittsburgh does have expansion issues, I think you have to assume he's going to end up there. And one thing about this league, Ryan, is you're right. You look at it historically, an expansion team is not going to do much. This is a weird league now. If you get goaltending, there's not a lot of difference between these teams.
Last one for you, and it's purely just a thoughtful question or looking for.
Oh, great.
No, okay, no. Quite honestly, what were your emotions last night? Because I didn't have a rooting interest, but I just felt terrible for Craig Anderson when that puck went in.
Yeah, it was. You know, there were a lot of like there are a lot of guys to root for on that Ottawa team. Anderson won for sure. You know, it's kind of funny. I was talking to someone today from another team. I was just checking some information and. You know, I think teams, like, they looked at Ottawa taking Pittsburgh to Game 7 overtime last night, and they were kind of gritting their teeth. Not in disrespect, I don't think, but it's kind of like there's so many teams here that are so close in this league that you look at Ottawa taking Pittsburgh to Game 7 overtime and you say, man, that should have been us. We could have been there. And I'm sure Washington thinks that, and I'm sure, you know, Columbus thinks that, and I'm sure the Rangers think that, and I'm sure Montreal thinks that. And, you know, I'm sure even Tampa Bay, a team that missed the playoffs, is looking at it like, you know what, that could have been us. And I think that's, you know, I mean, Ottawa hadn't, I thought they were going to totally become unglued there in the third period. They went through a real mental meltdown with the penalty against Dion and their reaction to it. But when they scored that goal, I was like, it's destiny. Like, this team has a force on them bigger than us. And you know what? They finally gave Craig Anderson something he couldn't see, and it beat him. And you're right. I mean, Anderson had an incredible year. And not only the way he played, but what he went through personally, and his wife tweeted out right after the game. You know, he had a phenomenal season. And I think there were a lot of people that were really rooting for him, Dean, no question.
Great stuff today, buddy. Appreciate it. Enjoy a weekend off, sort of, right? A little
Vegas,
bit?
Yeah, Vegas.
Well, media day is Sunday, so yeah. We'll travel Sunday. At least it's close. I can stay home Friday and Saturday.
There you go. Thanks, Elliot. We'll talk Monday.
All right, guys. Have a great weekend.